Our text for preaching today comes to us from the Good News according to Luke. It's a story of how Jesus, it's a hard text, a story of how Jesus responds when he realizes the world is not the way he wants it to be. So I invite you to listen for God's living word to you this morning in these words, and also in what follows, and in the music I'm going to play as a kind of soundtrack to our reading in the sermon this morning. At that very hour, some Pharisees came and said to him, "Get away from here, for Herod wants to kill you." He said to them, "Go and tell that fox for me, 'Listen, I am casting out demons and performing cures today and tomorrow, and on the third day I finish my work.' Yet today, tomorrow, and the next day, I must be on my way, because it is impossible for a prophet to be killed away from Jerusalem. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it, how often have I desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you are not willing. See, your house is left to you, and I tell you, you will not see me until the time comes when you say, 'Blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord.'" The word of God for the people of God. I'm quite sure that by now most of you have heard my flood story often enough, either from this pulpit or in person, that you could probably tell it yourself, really. But one aspect of the story that I often leave out is that my dog, Tammy, died that night. I tend to omit that detail because 238 people also died that night. So talking about the loss of my dog in that context just seems inappropriate. But I can assure you that as an 11-year-old boy who spent essentially every waking hour with his dog, I loved Tammy nearly as much as I loved my mother and father, my mom and dad. So it is surprising that I didn't grieve her death more at the time. I was too overwhelmed with the enormity of the loss and devastation around me. The loss of our home, the destruction of the lake and the park and the grounds where I paddled rowboats, picnicked with my family, played with my cousins. The death of several of my friends, kids from the neighborhood, teammates from my baseball team. The complete destruction of the baseball diamond where we played, ground that was every bit as sacred to me as a young boy as Yankee Stadium is to the average New Yorker. I was overwhelmed and numbed by it all. But 25 years later, on a ceremonial walk to commemorate that terrible night and to remember and honor loved ones who died, I took a carnation from a basket at the start of the walk in memory of Tammy. I carried it with me in a little backpack for about a mile as my sister and I strolled along the greenway that now runs parallel to Rapid Creek, the creek that flooded. But then, and I hadn't planned to do this, we crossed a bridge that spanned that creek very near the spot where I imagined Tammy likely drowned that night. I stopped midway over the bridge, took the carnation from my backpack, threw it into the creek, and immediately burst into tears. I turned to my sister, and when I could finally choke out the words, I said, "I've been waiting 25 years. To bury Tammy." The lesson I learned that day is that we can carry grief around, clearly, carry grief around inside of us for years. I suspect you have learned that lesson too, in your own way. I saw an article recently that said, grief is like a ball in a box with a pain button fixed to the inside. Looks something like that. And of course, when the initial event that causes the grief happens, the ball takes up most of the space in the box. So that even with just a little jostling in the rough and tumble of life, bang, it hits that button, and you feel that jolt of pain. Happens all the time, frequently. But then over time, the ball gets a little bit smaller. Maybe looks a little bit more like this. So even with some jostling in the rough and tumble, hurly-burly of life, bounces around, doesn't always hit the pain button. But sometimes it does. It's just as painful in that moment as it was early on. Excuse me. But of course, the other thing that happens is that other balls start to fill our box. Start to bang around and hit the pain button. Which is why I think we need the language and the practice of lament. Our culture is not proficient in this practice. We tend to keep the lid on our boxes closed, our grief trapped inside. And we're diminished by that. Lament is what Jesus did when he looked out over Jerusalem and realized the capital of his homeland was not the city he had hoped it would be. It was not a place of peace, a place that welcomed the prophets, welcomed the truth. It was not a city that approximated the reign of God. It was instead a place of violence, a place that rejected the truth, that killed the prophets. But that was just the beginning for him. Just a few weeks later, he would offer perhaps the most poignant lament in history when he found himself alone, dying on that cross. My God, why have you forsaken me? It's a prayer I would guess most of us have felt or voiced at some point in our lives. Lament is what the people of my hometown did the day after the dam broke and the floodwaters had finally receded. Lament. Lament is what the people of New Zealand are doing today. And indeed, what people of good conscience and good faith and loving hearts, tender hearts, are doing the world over in solidarity with them, following the terrible shootings in two mosques, ironically in the city of Christchurch. So today, on this one Sunday of Lent, just this one Sunday, we're going to join them. We're going to continue the practice we began last week. We're going to share in a visual meditation in the hope, perhaps, of letting the ball out of the box. So let me invite you to focus your attention on the image on the cover of your bulletin, please. Imagine that you are that angel. It's just you, alone in your own private space. Where is that tear coming from? What happened to cause it? Let that memory continue to come into focus. As you reflect on that experience, how do you feel right now? How big is that ball? What would it be like to open that box and to let it go?